It's episode 15 of the Canes Cast, starring the Hurricanes.com Mr. Everything, Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We're here for you with a Halloween theme. Well, seeing he's named Michael, and I'm also named Michael, this is a thriller.
Ooh, I like it.
Let's go with that one. Here we are. Mr. Smith, well, let's go with that. Trick or treat for the Carolina Hurricanes through the month of October. 10 games in, this team is 4-4-2. So let's get to a question that a lot of people have been asking and want to know. Is this team better than years past? I'm going to put out the first answer. I'm going to put this out here early.
Okay.
I'm gonna send this over to you if you want it.
I'll take it, and if not,
you just send it right back.
There we go. We should play, maybe in future podcasts, we'll play a game, like take it or
send it right back.
Send it right back.
Yeah.
Sort of like a buy or sell.
I like that.
There's an idea.
You can keep it or send it right back.
Yeah,
is the name of the game.
Yeah.
We can start it right now, even though we haven't
given
it
we
much
could.
Thought. But
maybe
we
later.
Haven't given it much thought, so I'm just gonna say, look, yes, this team is better than years past, even though the record right now is NHL 500. And I hate to break this news to people. NHL 500 doesn't get you into the postseason, but they are better. The talent level on the ice is better. The compete level is, I think, as good or better than what we've seen in years past. They have been in every game just about. And the one game where it looked like they were going to get blown out, they put together a furious rally against Dallas, and you could make a case they could have won or at least gotten a point there. So while the results look the same, I think the team this year is a better team. It's just now doing what they have to do to find a way to close out a win. And for people who are, as my bag falls in the background.
There it goes. So, that's kind of ghostly.
Well, it is Halloween.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the mics picked it up, but we just acknowledged it here on the podcast. So we could either edit it or keep it in.
I say we keep it in. We're going to leave it as a take it or leave it. We're leaving it.
There it is.
Or send it right back. I forget what the game's called even.
The bag put it out there.
Right. And we took it.
And we're going to take it.
Yeah.
So there you have it. So that's my take on the first 10 games of the month of October from what I've seen from this Canes team versus, and let's just go to Bill Peters' era, the last 3 years since Bill Peters has been the head coach.
Yeah, and when we say Hockey 500, I mean, that's exactly what it is. We can't look at the record and say 4-4-2 is actually 4-6 and they're under 500.
You go by points in
exactly,
the NHL.
Points percentage, and the Hurricanes earn 10 of a possible 20 points, which is exactly 500. And yeah, I tend to agree with you in that this year's team does have more talent on it than in years past. I think when you look at it, just the sheer talent of the team plus the talent in depth, not only here but in Charlotte, I think this organization is as good as it has been since Bill Peters took over behind the bench. But, you know, we look at the results from October, and the team went 3-2 on the road in October.
That's pretty good when you consider who they had to play on the road too, Michael.
Who they had to play and not necessarily as grueling of a travel schedule as it usually is. You know, the games were pretty spread out. The State Fair road trip, as we refer to it, wasn't as long or taxing. But the Hurricanes still went on the road and played a game over 500. There's no excuse for the team to be at 500 after October. They should have been better at home. They were 1-2-2. That's not good enough to get it done. You've got to be better at home, especially coming off opening night. Big win against Minnesota, playing a divisional opponent next in Columbus. And then, of course, you do get good teams in here, Tampa Bay, St. Louis,
Anaheim
last night.
You had Anaheim coming in, playing a 5 o'clock game after a 7 o'clock start the night before against Tampa Bay. That's the game where you're up 3-2 in the third. You either find a way to get the fourth goal or you clamp it down and you win it 3-2. And that goes to something we'll talk about in a second. But, yeah, it is good teams, but you find a way to win at home during that stretch. And, look, the Canes, they had a chance. The Tampa game, while it finished 5-1, was not a 5-1 hockey game.
Right.
That was 2-1 with 3 minutes to go.
Yep.
So, pull the goalie with 3 minutes left. They find a way to pump in two goals and that, and then they get Nikita Kucherov, who just has scored on everybody this year, scores with 4 seconds left to blow that game wide open.
Pure garbage time goal for Kucherov, but that's what he does. That's what a goal scorer does.
Yeah, when you give him an inch, they're going to find a way to put the puck behind the goaltender. It's what he did. That's fine. The St. Louis game, I don't want to do here's the understandable loss at home, but you played Toronto the night before. We travel with the team, so we can go full disclosure on this. You don't land in Raleigh until, about 2 in the morning is when we landed, got off the plane.
Yep.
So there's that. Here's a big rested team from the Western Conference waiting for you, really talented. That game goes down to the very end. Canes have a chance. But they didn't win. They have to find a way to win. So
right.
What's and, not there, Mike?
And that's the sticking point, really, is you've touched on a lot of these games, even the Tampa Bay game that got out of hand late with empty net goals and then Kucherov's goal. They're all one-goal contests.
Yeah.
It's about finding that big play when you need it most. It's about when you come into the third period with a lead like the Hurricanes had on Sunday, or if you're in a tied score, finding a way to get a point, and preferably with a lead against Anaheim, finding a way to get 2 points. That seems to be what's missing is just the big play when the team needs it, whether that's a goal or a defensive stop, something of that sort. That seems to be what's missing early on, because the Hurricanes haven't been able to find ways to win games they should be winning.
All right, so let's keep a not necessarily a Halloween theme on this, because Lord knows we don't want to do the Saw themes and all of that, but is there a feeling that maybe some guys are cursed right now? Because how many times have we seen Sebastian Aho either hit a post, hit the crossbar, or be just simply robbed by a goaltender? We saw it in Toronto in a game that the team won. Noah Hanifin has Frederik Andersen on his stomach, dead to rights, and somehow he makes an amazing save. It just seems to me there are times where you're like, that didn't go in. How? In Elias Lindholm. I don't know what the Finnish or the Swedish curse or European curse or any kind of curse is, but, man, he has to be amongst the league leaders in posts hit this year.
And Hanifin, too, I think, hit the post against St. Louis next night, too. So, and Aho on Sunday against Anaheim, has the breakaway in 3-on-3 overtime, and Ryan Miller looking like, his 2006 self, really, coming up with a big save.
He looked like the 2010 USA goalie in the Olympics self.
Yeah. So and for a guy like Sebastian Aho, I think that once he finds the first one, and the hope was that he would find it earlier than November. Last year in his rookie season, it took him until, I think, about a week into November to score his first goal. Actually scored two in that game. I believe it was against Washington.
Yeah, it was against the Caps, I think, 12 games, 14 games into his career.
And then, from there he proceeded to score, more than 20 goals. I think the hope was that this year, he'd find the back of the net earlier, and then be able to really build a season on top of that. He hasn't been able to find the back of the net yet, but I don't think it's for a lack of creating chances. He's had plenty of chances. Sometimes it's just come down to bad luck and the goaltender making a good save. And I do think when he finds that first goal, just as he did last year against Washington, I think once he finds that first goal, they're going to come in bunches for him. And I think that's going to be good for the Hurricanes, because really, right now, they're relying on Jeff Skinner for goals, and he's their most talented goal scorer, no doubt. And he came up again big when the Hurricanes needed one Sunday night against Anaheim. You look through that first period, and the team just didn't have anything going on, which, you talk to players after the game, Jordan Staal, Justin Falk, and they'll tell you straight up that it was inexcusable for the Hurricanes to have that sort of start against a team that had a start time 22 hours earlier the night before. But then, when the Hurricanes needed contribution the most, it was Jeff Skinner who came through on the power play.
Yeah, 7 goals in his first 10 games this year. That's a new career best to start a season in the first 10 games for Jeff Skinner. Previously done 6. He did that, if you include this year, 3 times. So 7 is now the bar for him, and he's scoring. By the way, Sebastian Aho, 14 games last year. It was on November 12th against the Washington Capitals that he broke through in a big way with 2 goals.
And I'm not the best at math, but that puts Skinner somewhere in the neighborhood of, 55 goals this season.
Yeah.
I mean, probably not sustainable.
If you extrapolate this,
right.
Yeah.
Eric Tulski will probably tell you not sustainable, but I don't think there's any doubt that Skinner's going to lead this team in goals this season, probably headed for another 30-goal season. And that's what the Hurricanes offense needs, because as we've seen early on in the season, they're still trying to find a consistent answer for scoring both 5-on-5 and on the power play.
How about let's go to Jeff Skinner and what he projects to. Shane Willis and I talked about this on Hurricanes Live and during the game on the bench warmer segment we do in the intermission. Is this the year that Jeff Skinner cracks 40? Let's forget Eric Tulski, who is the great man who does the analytics for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Way smarter than any of us.
Oh, my goodness. But let's go with our guts here. I think he does get 40 this year.
He had, what, 37 last year?
37 last year.
Dangerous.
Had an unbelievable March finish to the season to get there. But I think that now that he's started on time,
yeah,
I got to believe he's going to stay right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly has a possibility of happening. And that would probably be, what, the first time since Eric Staal that the Hurricanes have had a 40-goal score?
That is right.
So that would be big for the Hurricanes. We know the offense needs it. They have, you know, an acquisition like Justin Williams is probably going to be in and around 20 goals. Sebastian Aho, once he finds one, I think is going to be hopefully on the plus side of 20 goals. But if Jeff Skinner can score 40, that's certainly a boost to the Hurricanes' offense.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to need it. It's going to have to come into play. But they also need other guys to start scoring goals. And this isn't the, hey, let's call them out. But just taking a look at the numbers, you can sit back and say, these are the players who need to start scoring goals. And those players who need to start scoring for the Canes are Elias Lindholm, Sebastian Aho, Victor Rask. Those three guys are kind of counted on to be 20, 25 goal scorers for this team to have success, to be a playoff team. And while they're getting their chances, here's why I'm not worried. They're all getting their chances. But the panic button is, why isn't there more in the goal-scoring category than what we've seen from these players so far this year? I mean, Victor Rask scored on opening night, and then he scores the other night. And it's been a little feast or famine with him. Is there anybody else who you're looking at who say, hey, goals have to start coming in here? Or can we say these three guys kind of really need to find a way to light the lamp more?
Those guys definitely, I know he's a defenseman, but it was nice to see Justin Falk break through on Sunday night against Anaheim. He's a big part of the power play and what that's capable of doing. I mean, his shot from the point, as we saw last night, is just an absolute laser. And once he gets going and starts regularly contributing on that power play, you're going to see those numbers dip up. Or tick up,
tick
I guess.
Up. Yeah, the uptick dip up is, would the, be, is the term, yes.
Would be the complete opposite. The other thing about October that's interesting is the Hurricanes have not finished over 500 in October since 2008. That was the last season that this team made the playoffs, 2008-09. I don't want to say, you know, just because the Hurricanes finished at 500 this October doesn't mean they won't make the playoffs. I still think they're in a good position in the standings to still be successful in the months ahead. But they had an opportunity to finish above 500 in the month of October for the first time in almost 10 years and weren't able to do it. They were, what, 5 minutes away from it?
Yeah.
So it definitely is. I think Sunday's game left a bit of a more of a sour taste in people's mouths and in the locker room too. I mean, Jordan Staal, Justin Falk, the two captains that we talked to after the game last night, they weren't happy. They weren't happy with the performance.
Well, they shouldn't be.
They plainly said it needed to be better. So I look for a team that's going to come out this week out west in Colorado and Arizona, hopefully hungry for points.
And by the way, I like when players say that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I mean, that should not be something where fans are like, well, why were they? No, you want captains of the team to say, this performance is not acceptable, or we need to do this. This is where we need to get better. Justin Williams, who doesn't have a letter, but said it after the St. Louis game as much, they have to find a way to win these games. And I need to quote a college coach from the area, Steve Logan, who said this a lot, and I have adopted this phrase, you can't do it until you do it. And they have to find the answers in the room. I'm not going to go all Montreal general manager Marc Bergeron for you, but the answer is in the room. Those are the guys you've got to provide it. They're close. They're knocking on the door. Now they just got to go out and do that. But I think this Colorado-Arizona trip is going to provide a good insight into that, because last year against Colorado and Arizona, two teams that were doormats in the National Hockey League, the Hurricanes went 1-2-1. That is 3 possible points out of 8 that is 3 points, not possible, 3 points out of a possible 8 that you should get against those teams. How the Canes do in these next 2 games, I think you're going to tell me a lot about where they're at this season, because it's not an easy road trip. Arizona's not a great environment to go play in. It's just not. Colorado is not. The Pepsi Center is not what it used to be, or Pepsi Arena, or whatever they're calling it now.
I think it's Center.
I think it's still the Center. But it's a place where the Canes have to get 3 points on this road trip. That's the minimum, 3 points. So if they come back with 3 points in their back pocket, I think that next Monday when we're doing the Canes cast, episode 16. This is episode 15 right now, Michael Smith.
15.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. But it's one of those things where I'm going to know a lot more about the Hurricanes after these two games to kick off November than I think we did for the Canes last November at this time.
And it's interesting the way the schedule sets up, too, because we just got out of a segment of 4-6, I believe it was. It was at least 3-4, 4-6. And that came after the beginning of the season where the Hurricanes were sitting back a lot. I mean, a lot of teams were playing regular games every other night sort of scenario, and the Hurricanes had these, you know, 2 or 3 days in between games, and they just kind of hit that rhythm recently of actually getting into this, you know, game, practice, game sort of rhythm. And now we have a little break again. Today was an off day. This is Monday, October 30th that we're recording this. They'll get back on the ice for practice Tuesday, October 31st, Halloween. And then another practice again on Wednesday before heading out to Colorado. So a chance for the team to sort of step back, assess October, and come back ready to work on the ice Tuesday and Wednesday, and maybe correct some of these things that have been plaguing the team on the ice before they head to Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, we'll figure that one out. But, you know, Colorado this year, with all of the weird stuff that's been going on with that team, they've actually been pretty good for an Avalanche team that people keep pointing to saying there's a lot of problems and why isn't this guy traded or what's going on with their general manager, Joe Sakic. Yeah, they're winning games. They're beating teams. On the other hand, Arizona yet to get a win so far on this season. So you figured out to the tune of for this Colorado team, they're in third place in the Central Division, 6-5. Well, that's not great. It's way better than what we thought they were going to be.
Yeah, especially after last season, they were by far the worst team in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about that. So.
And interestingly enough, too, Colorado is off until Thursday, so that'll be the first game of the week for both of these teams. Both should be well-rested. The Hurricanes, obviously, will have to see how they adjust from the flight out there. That's probably, what, 3.5 hours or so?
Yeah, give or take.
But you gain a couple of hours, you get a good night of rest, and it should be good to go for Thursday. And Arizona, I believe, right now wrapping up a trip out east, and I believe they return home maybe after tonight against Philadelphia. But again, that's going to be a hungry team, especially if they come into that game still without a regulation win. That's going to be a very hungry team that the Hurricanes run into. They're going to need to be at their best. And like you said, 3 out of 4 points is a must, I would have to think. And 4 out of 4 would be extremely ideal.
Yeah, I mean, when you go on the road, even when you're playing a bad team,
yeah,
you got to think law of averages say they're going to win a game or they'll get points somewhere. Canes need to get the 3 points on this trip. I'm setting the bar at 3 points on this trip because of who they're playing and how the Canes have played. Even though the record says 4-4-2, this team is better than 4-4-2. They've played better hockey than what the results show.
And speaking of collecting points, I think a couple of podcasts ago, we were in Edmonton and we were assessing the rest of the month. I think I said that the Hurricanes would I was very optimistic, would earn 15 of a possible 20. That might have been a little misguided because I think 3 points had already gone by the wayside. I think you said a little more accurate, 12 out of 20. Unfortunately, they came in below both of us in that situation. But, you know, like we said earlier, it wasn't the worst October this team has had. It wasn't the best they've had. But compared to ones in the last 9 or 10 years or so, it wasn't too bad. But there's some things I think that the locker room knows that they need to key on, identify, and fix. And I think those things are very fixable. So a big November sets up with as we mentioned, another trip out west to Colorado and Arizona here in the first week.
Yeah, 13 games in November. So that's 26 points that are on the table. I'm going to say 18 are out there for the Hurricanes.
So that 13 would be 500.
Yep.
Yeah, 18 sounds like a good number. 18 to 20.
Yeah. I mean, 20 would be great.
Yes.
I mean, 20 to me, I think the 18 to 20 range is really possible because I'm going to go with how the schedule sets up. There are a lot of off days. There are two back-to-backs that are the travel you play and then come back and play at the PNC Arena. And the team that's going to be at the PNC Arena, generally not friendly teams, the Chicago Blackhawks after you got to play in Columbus the night before. And then the Islanders, who you actually play 3 days earlier, but you've got to play Buffalo in between and then come back and play here. So that's kind of not the friendliest schedule as far as travel is concerned. But Canes have more games at home than they do on the road for those 13, if I do the math quickly, and I am right, it's 7 versus 6. So.
And that's, I think, too important for the Hurricanes to have a good November to set themselves up heading into December, because you look at the December schedule, the team's going to be on the road for essentially the first 2 weeks of the month. It's going to be a grueling trip, no matter what the record of the teams are that they end up facing. It's going to be an extremely grueling trip. So for the Hurricanes to set themselves up nicely heading into that road trip, it'll be important for them to have a good month here in November.
Look, if the Canes have 30 points at the end of November, they're in a good spot. You know, that's kind of, to me, where you can target some things that'll be coming up. And it starts off with this road trip against two, and you don't say this often in the NHL on the road, but against two beatable teams on the road, and that's where the Hurricanes are. Somebody who has not had a problem racking up some points, though, the Charlotte Checkers. They're 6-3-0 in 9 games under head coach Mike Vellucci, and they are getting a reinforcement as Yanni Kuokkanen has been sent down to Charlotte. He had 9 games to play up here before the Canes then put him on his entry-level contract, and that clock starts ticking where you become closer to being a restricted free agent. Let's talk a little bit about Yanni Kuokkanen, and then we'll get into the Checkers for half a second on this, although this is the Canes cast. Everything's in play with the Hurricanes. Not surprised Yanni Kuokkanen was sent down to Charlotte. As a matter of fact, this was kind of the plan all along. They wanted to get a look at him, and while he didn't come up with points in his 4 games here, he did have 6 shots on goal. He did have a couple of moments where he stood out in a good way, and now he gets a chance to go because he was drafted out of the Finnish league, that he can now go play, and his pro-level contract, his NHL contract, doesn't kick in. He can play in Charlotte all year.
Yeah, and I thought he provided a spark for an offense that otherwise was maybe looking for one on some nights. I mean, I think what we saw is a guy who is he's just 19 years old. First of all, and I think a year in Charlotte is going to do him wonders from a developmental standpoint, so that next year when he comes into camp, he's going to know exactly what's expected of him. He got to spend a month with an NHL team. He got to go on a road trip to Western Canada. He got to practice with a team. He got to play 4 games with the team. He got to learn at the highest level in the world, so that now when he comes back next year, or even later this year.
I mean, they got 5 more games where they can bring him up and play him.
Right.
So if he goes down to Charlotte and starts to light it up the way that Lucas Walmark is lighting it up with the Checkers right now, but if he goes down there and goes on a tear, they can call him up and get another 5-game look at him if they want to before they have to make the decision to play him past 9 games or return him back to the Checkers.
Yeah, nothing's to say we won't see him again this year, but as Bill Peters said on Sunday before the Anaheim game, the plan was to send Kuokkanen back after the Friday game against St. Louis, but of course Teuvo Teravainen had that awkward fall to the ice in the second period. They weren't sure of his status heading into the game on Sunday, so they kept Kuokkanen around. He ends up playing on Sunday and now is sent back to Charlotte on Monday. As we've said, we might see him again this year. There's certainly the possibility. Could see him again next year, of course. But he's going to provide a big offensive boost to a Charlotte team that's had some pretty good success here early on in the season in the Eastern Conference.
And Lucas, and that, first of all, is a big thing for this Checkers team, not having to play in the Western Conference.
Finally, somebody looked at a map.
Yeah. Trust me. I am not shocked at how geography doesn't play into any decisions for certain sports leagues,
or you have teams that don't even play a full schedule.
No, well, why would you? you take 2 games off of your schedule.
Why not?
And then we'll just prorate it for you.
Yeah, that's another podcast.
Yeah, it's for someone else to do. We don't want to get in trouble yet. But Lucas Walmark, 12 points in 9 games, 3 goals, 9 assists. So good to see him get off to a hot start.
He's definitely one to keep an eye on. I know the coaching staff liked what they saw of him in the exhibition season. He's a strong center. I think if I were making the decisions, I would get a look at him at this level sooner rather than later. but I'm not making those decisions. And as we've talked about before, we don't know anything. Nobody tells us anything. We're just here talking into a couple of microphones.
That is the motto of the Canes Cast.
But he's one definitely to keep an eye on. We've said it, we said it before the season to watch him, but now his early season point production, I think he's proving a point. He's saying, hey, give me another look at the NHL level, because he did get a couple of games up top last season, but it might be time again to maybe give Lucas Walmark a ring.
Well, I mean, if you're looking for offense,
right,
that could be the thing. And that's, to me, if we're going to do a thread through the Canes season right now, Michael, we've seen some games where the offense is there, Edmonton, Toronto. We've seen some games where it takes a while, but it gets kicked into gear. See what happened in Dallas, where they scored 3 goals against the Stars, and that was really sparked by Jeff Skinner. They scored 3 goals against Anaheim, and they started off slow, but then had a great second period and jump out to the lead on the Justin Falk goal, as we pointed out. They've had some flashes of offense, and they've also had a lot of one-goal games. And Bill Peter said it the other day in his press conference after Anaheim. This is a 3-2, 2-1 league. And if you are on the right side of the 2-1 score, it's really good. The tough thing for me is trying to figure out how this team can go from 5-6 goals to 1 goal in the course of 48 hours. And I know that that's got to be frustrating for the guys in the locker room. They say as much, and for the coaching staff. I just don't know how you get there.
Yeah, consistency, I think, was, when you look back at October, that was the one thing, maybe the common thread that wasn't as evident throughout the entire month, because you had games like the Calgary game, the 2-1 win, or games like the Toronto game, 6-3, game like the one in Edmonton, which was 6-2, I believe. Yep. These which team is the Hurricanes team we're going to see on a consistent basis? I don't know if we've seen that really come to fruition just yet. I think it's building there, but I think the Hurricanes need to find that consistency sooner rather than later if they're going to have prolonged success this season.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to find a way. That is the name of the game. What do the best teams in the league do? They throw the same game on the ice every night.
Night in and night out, for sure.
We can talk about, oh, well, it's a simple formula, but it's one thing to say it's a simple formula. It is another thing to go out and try to do it night after night after night in this league. Because, the other team, the disparity, Michael, between the top teams in the league and the worst teams, it's not like it used to be. Every team has, you can put me in check on this one. I don't want to do, I'm going to put this out there and you can take it for another time. But every team has a star or has a player who is capable of winning a game, breaking out and having a big game. And that's why you get into these games where you play loose or you play run and gun, and all of a sudden it changes up a whole bunch on what you want to do. And Bill Peters doesn't want his team to go run around, and I get it, and I don't blame him for it at all. 5-3, by the way, was the Edmonton game.
Oh, so I gave the Hurricanes an extra goal.
You just gave them the Edmonton goal. I'm fine with that. But we saw them play in Edmonton, and it was loose. They gave up 51 shots.
Right.
But the offense was there, like, right off the hop.
Yeah.
Then you see them play this lockdown game against Calgary, and they're up 2-0, but you got to hold on late because Calgary scores a goal, and then you got to, tighten the clamps for it. And there's some things. I remember I asked Bill Peters after the game, is that as close to the game that you want this team to play? And he said, we still have a lot of things to work on, and they do. But this becomes a league where if you find out who you are and how you play, and you can do that every night, those are the teams that are in the playoffs.
What was that, the quote from football? They are who we thought they were.
Thank you very much.
And we let them off the hook.
That's it. And that was the Bears. They were who they thought we were. But we'll figure that out. Is there anybody else down in Charlotte before we move on to a question I have overall about the NHL and its officiating? So this will be putting us in deep water here. But is there anybody else in Charlotte maybe to keep an eye on early on?
Well, I mean, I think you have to consider Phil DiGiuseppe because he's played almost, I believe, in terms of total games played, I think he's almost played a full season at the NHL level. And if you're looking for scoring, a guy like Lucas Walmark or a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe, somebody who's going to come up here and inject some life and perhaps maybe desperation isn't the right word, but clearly when they
hunger?
Get
how about a hunger? Hunger, that's a word that the team likes to use a lot, and I agree with it.
And when they get the call up, they're going to want to make an impression and stay here. So you know, you saw it a few seasons ago when the team recalled Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin, and you know, the rest is history. They're now one of the best defensive duos in the NHL. But that call up sort of changed things, because you had two guys coming in who were hungry and ready to prove something. And if the Hurricanes want to inject some life into their offense, perhaps a call up like a guy like Lucas Walmark or Phil DiGiuseppe is what this team is looking for.
Yeah, and of course you can maybe look for somebody looking for his first NHL goal, so Chuck Caton can have the call of that goal.
Wow.
Proud noise only.
Thank you very much. So as far as we are concerned for the Carolina Hurricanes, there's lots of things for the stats we can point to that we can say this is what they're good at, what they need to improve on. You know, stats can tell you lots of things and however you want to twist them. But can't argue with the fact this is the least penalized team in the league. I mean, they do not take penalties. As a matter of fact, they went consecutive games, Michael, without taking a penalty.
Which is the first time in franchise history, apparently.
Did not take a penalty against St. Louis. Did not take a penalty against Anaheim. I'm going to ask, is what should be a positive, perhaps a negative for the Carolina Hurricanes, because officials know this team plays the game the right way. They don't take a lot of penalties. They don't take a lot of stick infractions. So they're not going to look at the other team, and maybe, just maybe, we're going to have a 2 or 3 penalty game tonight. The referees swallow the whistle because they know the Hurricanes aren't making those infractions. So you're not going to have a game where it's 10-0 in the penalty department for one team versus the other. Do you think maybe that's part of it? Because the more I watch it, I've seen some stuff more than usual, and this is not a complaint. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I've always wanted consistency in the officiating. So if they're not going to call penalties on your team, that means they're probably not going to call penalties on the opponent either.
It could be. I mean, it's an interesting theory. I know when we ask – when we ask head coach Bill Peters about it, he credits his team for just knowing you know, what the emphasis is this year, especially as it pertains to slashing stick penalties, keeping your stick down, not slashing guys on the hands or anywhere around the stick that's not an attempt to play the puck. But I do think, you know, we have seen some things that maybe should be called penalties. And maybe it is just a psyche thing where like you said, the you're never going to see a game that's that imbalanced where one team has 8 power plays and the other team doesn't have any. You might see one that has like 5-2 or something, maybe. But when you don't have a penalty called on yourself, perhaps maybe you're not going to have too many power plays on the other end, because that's just, you know, the way officiating minds work. I mean, I don't know the true answer to it. Maybe it's got some validity to it, maybe not. But, it's something worth considering.
Well, and, you know, for all the hand-wringing about the Hurricanes' power play success, they're still 15th in the league. Now, the number's not where they want it to be. It's under 20%. But they don't have the worst power play in the league. The Columbus Blue Jackets do. And let me throw out another theory, just going from another sport. You're a football fan, right?
Yeah.
The Oakland Raiders. You played the Raiders. You knew they were going to get 10 to 15 penalties. You take a look. The other team would have more penalties than what their average would be for the course of a game.
Some music just came on. I don't know if you can hear that on the podcast.
It is Thriller by Michael Jackson.
There it is.
See, this is what happens when you record in my studio
versus
Chuck Caton's studio.
Wow.
Proud noise only.
Thank you.
it is interesting. And when we talk about the power play, the fact that you mentioned the Hurricanes' power play is dead even, right in the middle of the league.
Yep.
But when you look at a game like the other night against St. Louis, it's magnified when that one power play that the team had didn't convert, especially when it doesn't convert and then the other team scores the game-winning goal on the very next shift. That's extremely magnified. So, bigger picture, maybe the Hurricanes' power play is just fine. It's, you know, it's right there in the middle of the pack. But
it's funny because the Canes' power play over those two games, what had 2 minutes and 16 seconds of a power play opportunity.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to judge when you're only – if you're not killing penalties, you know, that's the one thing. That's the good thing. If you only have to kill off one or two penalties a game, your penalty killers are going to be really good. And we know that Steve Smith, the defensive coach, the assistant coach for the Canes, does a awesome job coaching up the penalty killers. And when they only have to kill off one or two, they're going to be really good at it.
Right.
Same time, if you got a power play, you don't know where it's at, and you're only getting two opportunities a game, hard to get better when that's all you're getting a look at right now.
Yeah. So. And the one thing maybe with the power play to potentially look at, and again, you know, we're talking into microphones. We're not actually in the coach's office. Maybe the Hurricanes, you know, should explore some different combinations,
sure,
some different options. I mean, when something isn't going right, you want to maybe get a fresh look at it. So maybe it's maybe you take a look at somebody different on the power play. Maybe you look at Jacob Slavin, you know, on the point, or Brett Pesce, you know,
yeah,
something like that, just to sort of inject some new life into it. But you know, again, they, you know, we're not in the coach's office,
no.
So.
But it's funny because on Saturday, I did ask Bill Peters about when special teams, and I was speaking in nebulous terms, when special teams are not going right, how tough is it as a head coach to resist the temptation of tinkering with it and saying, I've got to trust these guys, they'll figure it out, or how tough is it as a head coach to say, I got to stick with these guys because, you know, these are my guys. And you know, I said it's a fine line, but if you're not getting the results, you're going to see some changes. And I think if this road trip we don't see any results on a power play,
right,
you're going to see somebody new draw in. And why not? Give somebody else the chance to do that. All right. It is a bit of a Halloween edition of the Canes Cast.
And we do. A Thriller is playing in the background. I don't know if you can hear it, but it's playing in the background as we record this podcast.
I just turned it off.
And now it's over.
That. All right. So if people know and listen to the Canes Cast, Michael and I like movies. We're kind of big fans of going to the cinema,
yeah,
and watching this. Question for you around the Halloween time.
Are
you a scary movie guy?
Not really. No. I think the best horror movie I've seen recently is Get Out. I don't know if you saw that.
I heard about it.
Yeah. It's, not your typical horror film. But it's excellent.
That was the, Key and Peele.
Yes. Peele. Yes.
Not,
Jordan Peele.
Yeah. Jordan Peele, not Keegan-Michael,
yeah,
Key.
Directed and maybe wrote as well.
Oh, I think he did,
Really excellent. I think that was his directorial debut, too.
Yeah, I am not a huge horror movie fan. Like, as a kid, couldn't do it. Now they, you know, some of them are funny. I don't have anything to go off of. But I can tell you, of the horror movies that are out there, like, yeah, Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, I've seen all of them. I cannot watch The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I've tried and I can't. I'm like, no, I'm out. Thank you. No, not
I don't
happening.
Know if I've ever seen it.
It's a good movie. So yeah. Everybody says I make it to about like 35 minutes. And I'm like, nope, time to turn this off.
One of my Let the Right One In is a Swedish,
yes,
film.
But they actually did make
an
it
American,
into American.
Which is Let Me In. Both of them very good.
Yes. Scary without giving you the full
exactly
on scare.
Sort of an understated horror to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan of like the crime thrillers, mm-hmm, not necessarily a straight horror movie. So I'm interested in the Michael Fassbender movie Snowman, which I've heard mixed reviews about.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, there's our Halloween take on everything that's happened here on the Canes Cast. Congratulations to new car owner Michael Smith.
Oh, thank you.
New car smell, buddy.
It smells wonderful.
It's one of the best things in the world.
And I don't think I realized how bad my old car was until I drove a new car. Now I understand the appeal of new cars. They're wonderful.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Canes Cast, episode 15. A bit of a thriller with Michael and Michael, but that's Smith and Maniscalco. He's Michael Smith from Hurricanes.com, web reporter, web editor, and all-around awesome human being who now drives a brand new car.
And your TV's Mike Maniscalco, who you can see each and every day on CarolinaHurricanes.com and on each and every game night on Fox Sports Carolinas and Southeast on occasion.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. We'll talk to you guys all next week with episode 16 of the Canes Cast.
Bye-bye.